Hello and welcome to the Leadership Deep Dive Show. I'm Margaret Katz-Kann, and I'm here today with my friend and colleague and partner, David Lanzulli. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Margaret.
And today I'm really happy to have the opportunity to ask David and sort of interview David, the author, about his new book, which is called Life Lessons from Memorable Movies. And it's been a lot of fun. I've had a chance to see parts, the thinking of this has been part of your LinkedIn content, and then it gelled into something bigger and more extensive. And today we get to talk about it. So I would love to first say congratulations on getting this book, out into print.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, it was well, more than a year. I'd say about a year of writing, but then about 3 months of editing and getting ready for prime time. So it's quite a project. And I don't know, the print version's about what, 475 pages. Not that don't
It's
scare,
a
don't, it's a big book. It's my longest so far, but they're discrete little chapters each.
book. Yeah. So it's a
One,
book of essays, and each
right.
essay, in each essay, David takes a quote from a movie and finds just mines it for wisdom. And I would love to, we'll give you some examples, but there was a sweet story that you shared with me about how you got started on this project. And I remember there being like a connection to your dad
Oh
and
yeah,
ways you
no,
guys
this is
used to love
true.
movies. So yeah, so maybe share that.
Right. So my father was a huge movie fan. He felt like movies were the quintessential apex of expressions of pop culture. And he had vast interest and repertoire and knowledge of movies going back to the 1930s all the way up into the 2000s. He continued to watch modern movies. So I grew up watching movies with my father and kind of caught that interest. Back growing up on a black and white television, the broadcast channels in New York City would have movies on, and I'd watch those movies with him. Some of them filmed in black and white, some of them filmed in color, which we watched in black and white.
Did you guys go like talk about the lines or like what the meanings
Right.
were?
All the time. So that's kind of where the genesis of the book came from, is that somehow the way my brain works is some of these movie lines and movie scenes are emblazoned in my memory. Short, little scenes from these films. And my wife Lillian and I frequently, recite the, she's also interested and has an affection and interest in movies. We watch movies together. And of course, my daughters now also share this interest. And so a lot of the films I draw on in the book are from sort of the 80s, 90s, and 2000s, as opposed to, I have a lot of interest in stuff from the 40s and 50s and 60s and 70s, and a couple of those popped in there too.
Yeah, there are a lot of movies in here I have not seen. What do you think? Does
Yeah.
that matter?
I don't think it matters. I do think for those, including, you in the audience, if you read the some of these lines, you're just gonna know from pop
Right.
culture, even if
Whether
you
you've seen
haven't.
the movie or not, some of the
Right.
lines you've heard
Yes.
along the way.
Heard, you've
Yeah.
heard the yeah, you've heard the line. And I was speaking with one of my former coaching clients who's not so much a movie buff, but her husband is. So, you might be in a relationship with someone that has an affection or interest in movies, and this, they would recognize a lot of these films. But, she's seen several of the movies that I mentioned, she's seen once, and then she kind of knows the line. So this isn't about, this is not a book of cinema critique. It is a book about what you can take from that line or that scene and apply it in your life. And of course, I expand it. I mean, I make up a lot of what you can do to use that line in your life.
Right. You know? To think about. So, right, each chapter kind of takes off. And I would say I read it in some ways like a love letter to your dad.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like true. Just a tribute, like a tribute.
A tribute. And there's just a texture to it that like was born from, you know, David and his dad, who was very academic and very cerebral and philosophy based. Right. And I just could feel you guys having these conversations, you know, on the couch after watching the movie. So there was really a sweetness there for me.
Well, he would recite these lines too, which was kind of interesting. And the one I'm dealing with quite a bit right now is that he used to say about himself and to other people was, you know, a man's got to know his limitations. It's a scene from a Dirty Harry movie. And as I've gotten older and had my body doesn't function like it used to, that line resonates with me more and more. You know, maybe not so much when I was a young man, but certainly now it does. So some of these things, you know, you may find that when you watch, you know, the movie, the line didn't really land with you, but now you're at a stage of life where the wisdom is being revealed.
I love that. Yeah. Because obviously films are made by people at different points in their lives, and we can age in and out of things that are interesting to us or that resonate with us.
Yeah. And some of the movie lines and movie scenes are from, you know, comedies, and which I think, well, you and I were getting on the show today. We were talking about Rodney Dangerfield and how his form of comedy isn't necessarily your thing, and you're exploring that. And one of his films did make it in to the movie Back to School. And so there's a line in there, a scene in there where he's kind of in the classroom with Sam Kinison, and Sam Kinison's going crazy, you know. But, you know, comedy is one of those things, it's an acquired taste. And don't let that discourage you from reading a chapter based on, you know, Grown Ups 2 if you don't care for, you know, those types of movies, because there's a lot of wisdom that comes from a short line like sharing a piece of Hubba Bubba bubble gum and being somebody's Hubba Bubba baby.
Hubba Bubba baby. You know, we talked a little bit about maybe there's one chapter in there that I would love to just start as with, like, it's sort of an example of what somebody could expect if they buy the book. And it is a comedy, My Cousin Vinny.
Right.
Which is an old ish movie, 80s, right? It's an 80s movie, or early
90s. 80s, yeah, that's right, yes.
Yeah, anyway, and it's a movie that I had the opportunity to rewatch recently, and it was just as funny as it was the first time. But I'd love to give an example. You take a line from the movie, that's one of the courtroom scenes, and then you just run with it, which is typical of how these chapters work. And can you share a little bit about that chapter, David, and kind of how you're process went to through that chapter?
Well, folks might be thinking like it's the scene with Edwin Gwynn, who played the judge. He's also played Herman Munster on The Munsters, but he's in a serious but someone
Kevin shouted that out when we were watching. That's the guy from The Munsters. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. He's in a more serious and yet still comedic kind of role in that film.
Right. It's grumpy.
kind of grumpy, yeah. Kind of grumpy, right. And you know, you might think it's the scene where he has this banter with Joe Pesci about the Utes. Mm-hmm. But it's not that line. It's although that could have gone in a whole different direction. It's, you know, there could be a volume two here because there's so many quotes from many of these movies that I chose not to run with. But it's the line, there's some banter in the movie between Vinny and his fiance or soon to be fiance, you know, how could you be so sure? And
yeah, wasn't it during a cross examination?
Well, it comes in three times in the film. They're okay. Kind of bantering around in the hotel bedroom, and then it comes in two other scenes, one with her later in the film. But I'm focused on the one where he starts to cross-examine one of the witnesses in the courtroom about what he saw. And he asks him, like, are you sure? He says, yes, I'm sure. How could you be so sure? And then he proceeds to just, you know, take him down and, you know, ask him all these really powerful open-ended questions, which we use in coaching. And that's kind of where that came from, right? Because a lot of leadership, a lot of leaders, you know, want to get to a closed-end answer. So they tend to ask closed-end questions. And that scene and those scenes are really about open-ended questions. And can you really be sure, you know, given our biases and even our faulty memory, which is what this is more about in the film, faulty memory, which we know now the neuroscience on memory is pretty well understood, in that memory, some people's memories are better than others. Let's just put it that way. Yeah. So, and I bring in concept from Zen called beginner's mind, like always having, because when you're so sure about everything, there's no space for curiosity.
Right. And at this point in the chapter, we've pretty much left the courtroom.
Right.
And, you know, David is now using this question, like, what a great question. Should we all be asking ourselves this? Right. And really just right. Addressing this idea of when we claim certainty about something.
Right.
Now, does it right. serve us? How sure are we? You know, how could we be so sure?
Well, the one thing that's like, there are some things that general rule of thumb you can be pretty sure about. Like in modern society, if you're crossing a 2 or 4 lane highway, you might want to look both ways before venturing out into traffic. As I shared on LinkedIn, a video of a guy getting hit by a car, which was cringeworthy. Yeah. So there are some things we can be pretty sure about. Like, I mean, maybe if I'm out in rural Wyoming where I used to live, then, you know, I could get away with not looking both ways before crossing a dirt road, but out in the middle of nowhere, but might still be useful to look, might be skillful to look both ways.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of things that we think we're sure about, where it might be more skillful, we might be better served by having a more open and curious approach.
Yeah, I mean, you really talk about it through a leadership lens.
Right.
And I believe that this story was in this chapter, but my memory, I should probably be a witness probably. But you were talking about working in an office in San Francisco, and this was like, you were just a peripheral person in this, but you had a leader who had decided that one of the employees was lazy or not motivated.
Right.
And that leader, I think it was a man, but I don't know for sure, he or she was like so sure that this was the problem, you know?
Right.
And you tell this story and you ask that question, like from the movie, how could you be so sure?
Yeah. Yeah, it's that particular case I was talking about, you know, the perception, that's actually quite a good word to use here. It's our perception often of the way things are that may not be the actuality of the way things are. And, you know, his assumption was that this person was unmotivated, but it turned out that that wasn't the case. They just didn't have clear direction. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So now if you're so sure and you fire someone who could be a valuable contributor to the team because you think they lack motivation, you could really lose someone based on a false assumption. Yeah. And I'm pretty fond of Byron Katie's four questions, which I use with coaching clients frequently, especially when they have that sort of righteous, like, this is the way it is. And I say, are you sure? Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm sure. How could you be so sure? You know, who would you be without that thought?
Right.
What would be possible without that thought? Sometimes when you just get to that second, are you sure or is it true? That's, you know, I think in Byron right. Katie's methodology, true? Is it true? Can you positively know that it's true? It just starts to open up all kinds of possibilities when you grip less tightly or when you cling less tightly to what you think is, you know, or you think is true.
Yeah, it makes me think of two things, actually, both from the PQ program. And the first is where Shirzad Shamin gives an example of, and this is a parable, I mean, this he didn't make this up, but where you have four people in a dark room or blindfolded, right. And they each are touching a part of the elephant.
Right.
Yes. And they're each sure, you know, the person holding the leg of the elephant is sure that this is a tree.
Yes.
Right. And the person holding the tail thinks it's a vine or a snake or whatever. Right. And they are sure, but then they're, you know, they're missing kind of the bigger picture of all of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So my wife and I banter back and forth with that one all the time, especially when, you know, one of us will make a declarative statement and, you know, Lillian will look at me and say, are you sure?
How could you be so sure? And exactly. she can, I bet, rock the statin.
She totally rocks Melissa.
Like my cousin Vinny. Yeah.
Yeah. She does. Yeah. She does.
Yeah.
And we have our, and so it can be, especially if you know that film, you can kind of use it in a humorous sort of way.
Yeah.
But it's semi-serious. Like you could ask someone, as I do with coaching clients, like, are you sure? Yeah. Or I might say, have you ever seen the movie, My Cousin Vinny? Yes. Okay. Are you sure? And then it starts to wake them up a little bit, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. And then later in the chapter, David, you go on to sort of give people some different inquiries, some prompts, some really granular, like logistical suggestions. So for example, when you feel certain and maybe you realize you couldn't be so sure, then you start to, you know, what next? And so in this chapter, you talk about ask follow-up questions, right? Like there's a lot of really helpful granular suggestions. Examine your sources, consider what some alternatives might be. So there's a lot of very practical advice in here. Yeah.
Well, each chapter I try to bring, like, you know, our show here, we often invite the audience to go try something or go put it into practice. So nearly each chapter has something you can put into practice right away to, for example, be more curious, be less certain, have more of a beginner's mind, mm-hmm. As a leader. And, you know, in any area of your life, especially even in your, I find in my own relationship with Lillian and with my children, I get into more trouble when I am certain I know, you know, the answer than when I'm curious about what the answer might be.
Yeah.
Same thing with clients, coaching clients, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so that's just one chapter, and there are 50 plus chapters in here. And another one that really stuck with me was from A Few Good Men. And the line being, "You can't handle the truth," which anybody who has seen that movie probably, and that's one of those lines that everyone has heard it, even if you didn't know where it came from.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. But now there's a whole different journey from that line in that chapter about telling the truth. And you really focus on telling ourselves the truth, right? More than speaking the truth out loud. This that chapter is very focused on taking an honest inventory of how we are in relationship with our, with what's true for us.
Yeah. And sometimes that also, you know, takes some curiosity, is being curious, you know, about yourself. And are you willing to uncover your patterns, right, or the decision that you made that didn't turn out so helpful for you and others, and you unpack it? You know, we want to hold on to that righteousness of, you know, I'm right. And also being open to feedback, which was very difficult for me, because I think I talk about this in the chapter, if not somewhere else in the book, you know, growing up in New York City public school system and later Long Island public schools, I had some teachers that were quite harsh in their, with their feedback. And so quite critical. And I developed a sensitivity for receiving feedback, and that hasn't served me very well as an adult, in which I'm, you know, not because I can't handle the truth, but certainly that those early experiences with authority figures left me not necessarily wanting to hear the truth.
Yeah. Well, I think there's something that you're naming there too. I mean, you know, when you went through school, as when I went through school, like, I know this sounds, but like, dyslexia hadn't been invented yet, right? And right. So if right. you had a learning difference and you weren't keeping up, there was no compassion coming your way. So, I mean, I want to actually, I think many of us, and I include myself in that, who have a really hard time and have had to, you know, take a really deep breath and summon my self-management to receive feedback even now. But it's in part because you weren't getting feedback as a kid. You were getting criticism.
You were getting criticism.
Yeah. You know, very knotted together. And so it's hard. But I think that's part of what this chapter explores. You know, how do we, as adults, like, take a breath, you know, how can we begin to open up and take feedback from the planet, from specific people, you know?
Yeah. And can we be honest with ourselves,
right,
about mistakes that we've made, or our failure to take action when action was called for? So, you know, I tend to be someone who errs on the side of taking action, and sometimes that works out and sometimes it doesn't work out. And can I be honest with myself about how maybe refraining from saying something or refraining from, taking action would have been more skillful? And I've developed more skill in this area of sensing, you know, reading the space, reading, sensing the energy, and more quickly realizing, like, ooh, that didn't land so well. I better go clean that up.
Yeah. But when you can be honest with yourself, you can clean things up, which is much it leaves things in a much better shape than not being honest and clinging to your righteousness of like, I didn't do anything wrong. Or
yeah, I mean, I think there's a whole other direction we could go in that was not necessarily in that chapter, or around our conscience, mm-hmm. and our moral compass. Now, there are some films in there where I do get into the topic of moral choices and consequences. So, like, for example, one of the chapters is entitled Consequences, and that's from the John Wick film series. And in those films, the consequences of your actions are immediate and severe. And yet we live in a society now where the consequences of our actions aren't necessarily so immediate and aren't necessarily so severe. And so this is where having integrity, and I talk a lot about integrity in the book and in various other forms from other movies, is important. You know, and taking, I'm kind of drifting here, but yeah, taking ownership of your action or failure to act because of the consequences. And that's where, you know, when we, in our leadership training, Margaret, we talk about cleaning up messes, you know, that's owning, you know, sort of seeing the truth, owning the truth, and dealing with the consequences. So I'm combining a couple of chapters there.
absolutely. Yeah. I would love to just have my last question be, what did you learn when you were writing this book?
Oh, God.
That means that's how I know I asked a really good question.
What I learned, the main thing that I learned, well, I learned a lot about myself by taking each one of these scenes and lines and applying it to my own life. So there's a life lesson in each one of these 52 chapters for me, because I really thought deeply about my own life. And, you know, some of those learnings are more profound than others. But the main thing I learned, Margaret, is if you're going to write a book, have some fun with it.
I love that. I mean, and you know, one of my takeaways was just, I feel like if we're looking, there are fun opportunities for learning everywhere we look.
Yeah, I agree.
You can learn a life lesson from grown-ups too, anywhere is possible.
This is true. I've written, this is my published 8 collections of essays over the past 10 or so years. This one was the most fun. I had the most fun writing it. I must say the post creative part of the process, the editing and the formatting and the whole
less fun.
The whole thing around getting the audiobook produced was not all that much fun. Although on that last note, my lovely wife Lillian does do the audio version, which I had to condense the chapters and make them more sort of as the audiobook slightly different, same theme, but more for a listening audience. So if you like audiobooks, the chapters.
Because Lily's a great reader.
She is a really good reader. It was interesting. After my initial attempt to use an AI-generated voiceover, which I thought we were being invited to do on Amazon because they're inviting people, but I didn't realize I was not one of the people invited. I was not invited to the AI narrator party, you know. And we're but the print versions had come out, and I'm lying in bed one night with Lillian, which and we're reading from the book, and I'm stumbling because of my dyslexia. I'm stumbling over because I'm thinking like, well, maybe I'll read it, and then I start reading a chapter, and it's like just horrible because of my form of dyslexia. And then she picks up a chapter, and it just comes out perfectly.
Listening to a lullaby. Yeah.
Well, that's what she does, has yeah. done every day for 20, 30 years is to, you know, read out loud to first, second graders. So she has a knack for it. And so I asked her if she would do the voiceover, and she said that she would. And I had already created the voiceover chapters. There were more for a listening audience, more edited, not as wordy, a little bit more flowy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so if you like audiobooks, folks, you can it's a husband and wife collaboration co-created by David and Lillian Landrulli. Go get your audio copy on Audible. And she even brings to life some of the accents and some of the emphasis, right, of those, you know, movie lines.
Fun. Yeah. And this is all available through Amazon, right? People can get the Kindle, the print version,
yep.
and the Audible audio version.
Yep.
And we'll put all a link. Amazon. We'll put a link in the show notes for anybody who wants to check that out.
All right.
Well, great. Any questions I didn't ask you, David, that you would like to have me ask you?
Which chapter so far are you, I know, you know, there are a lot of films in there that you don't know, but which chapter kind of grabbed you, or which scene are you learning something from?
I think I've had fun. I mean, I picked the two that I for sure wanted to talk about. You know, I liked the Forrest Gump chapter. I think most recently I read the one about Jaws and you're going to need a bigger boat. And the right. sort of paradigm for how we get stuck in our own growth. And so that right. was one that I really enjoyed as well.
Oh, yeah.
I knew there was something to learn from a giant mechanical shark.
Well, I think we all face our, if you're up to anything in life, like hunting a great white shark, it doesn't have to necessarily be that. You're going to confront a moment in your life where you feel like you need a bigger boat. And I've had my fair share of those moments. So, yeah. And there is something about, as we say in our leadership work, you know, asking for help when you're confronted like that. So anyway, I talk about that in the chapter, and yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Roy Scheider is one of my favorite actors from the 70s into the 80s. And there's also another chapter in there that I won't name, where he's one of the main characters in that film. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you'll have to go get the book.
Go get the book. That's our thing to try at home. Go on Amazon and buy the book.
Yeah. Yeah, go buy the book, and you know, it's a sort of read where you don't have to read it sequentially. You know, you could just pick a movie, pick right. a life
That's
situation.
What I've been doing is jumping around, and
you just jump around. Yeah,
yeah.
You sit with it for a while. You remember that scene as like, oh, what does this have to offer me? You know, it's right. kind of like that. Yeah.
So this is a fun.
Have fun,
one.
Enjoy it, and yeah. thanks for the opportunity to share it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks, David. And thanks for your wisdom. And we'll see y'all next time.
See you next time.